Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, Pete Musto will tell us about the trend of more and more college students seeking help with mental health issues.
I remember because I was driving home, and I said to myself, I wonder what would happen if I just yanked my steering wheel to the left and drove into one of these light poles. And I wonder who would come to my funeral. And I wonder if anyone would care.
Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. Ana Mateo will tell us some of the many American English expressions using the word table.
We eat off them. We can also work at them. We play games on them, and at other times, we simply gather around them.
And finally, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, Doug Johnson and Mario Ritter will tell us about the laws and policies of President Franklin Roosevelt, including those known as the Second New Deal. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So let's get started. Over the last 10 years, the number of university students seeking help for mental or emotional problems has grown sharply. As Pete Musto tells us, a 2015 report from the Center for Collegiate Mental Health found the number of students seeking help increased at 5 times the rate of new students starting college during that time.
In addition, a 2015 report from the Association for University and College Counseling Center Directors found anxiety to be a major problem for students. Nearly half of all students who sought help in recent years said they felt anxious. In other words, the students said they felt unusually worried or afraid. An additional 40% of students said they felt depressed, very, very sad. Experts give several explanations for why the number of students seeking help for mental health issues is rising. One reason could simply be a change in American culture. In the United States, people are increasingly comfortable talking about mental health issues and bringing their problems to trained experts. Another reason could be related to the current generation of young people attending universities today. But one reason is surely higher education itself. Ben Locke is the executive director at the Center for Collegiate Mental Health. He also serves as the Director of Counseling and Psychological Services at Pennsylvania State University. Locke says feeling worried and sad are normal parts of life. But college is a difficult time when students want to make friends, find their identity, and succeed academically.
College being a place with high demands, lots of competition, and lots of concern about being able to get a good job after college certainly increases the level of stress that students experience.
Georgia felt the stress of college life in a very severe way. She began her studies at McGill University in Montreal, Canada, in 2010. She wanted very badly to succeed there, but she often worried she would fail. Georgia asked VOA not to share her surname. Even before she went to college, Georgia worried about things. At age 11, Georgia was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. OCD causes a person to focus intensely on the same thoughts and repeat the same behaviors over and over. At McGill, Georgia worried about her academic performance. She also worried about what she would do after college. In her third year of school, Georgia worried so much about her worrying that she began seeing a therapist. Her therapist suggested the medication called Adderall would help Georgia with her OCD. But as her final year at McGill grew closer, Georgia only worried more. She stopped eating regularly and did not sleep for weeks at a time. Her medication only made the problems worse. Her mood changed wildly. She also began to believe that her friends, as well as complete strangers, were watching her.
I was aware that it was crazy, but I also thought there's no other possible way that all these coincidences could be happening, and it really freaked me out.
Georgia stopped leaving her apartment. And because she lived far from home, her parents did not realize how serious her anxiety was. A young man named Jason also shared his story with VOA. Like Georgia, he did not want to give his surname. Jason is from Bethesda, in the eastern U.S. state of Maryland. Jason started seeing a therapist when he was 7 years old. At that time, his therapist diagnosed him with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD. This condition of the brain makes focusing for long periods of time difficult. It also affects a person's ability to think clearly before making decisions. Jason says having ADHD made school difficult for him throughout his life. He adds that he also struggles with depression. His therapist diagnosed him with the condition when he was in high school. Jason completed a 2-year associate's degree at Montgomery College in Rockville, Maryland, in the spring of 2007. He then began a bachelor's degree program at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, that fall. But just as he began classes, his life changed in several major ways. His mother and father told him they were separating. Then, his grandmother died. Jason tried to stay focused on his studies. But the next year, his parents decided to make their separation permanent and get divorced. A month later, he received more horrible news. His best friend died. Jason says all these things combined proved to be too much for him. Some days he was so sad he could not leave his bed. and then at one point he considered suicide.
I remember because I was driving home and I said to myself, I wonder what would happen if I just yanked my steering wheel to the left and drove into one of these light poles. And I wonder who would come to my funeral. And I wonder if anyone would care.
As soon as Jason began thinking suicidal thoughts, he knew he needed help. Next week, we will continue exploring mental health issues and how they affect college students. We will hear why experts say these issues are a growing concern and what can be done. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete.
Hello, and welcome to Words and Their Stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore the stories behind common expressions in American English. Today, we talk about an object found in every home. We eat off them. We can also work at them. We play games on them, and at other times, we simply gather around them. They are tables. A table is often at the center of many activities, so it is not surprising that the word table is used in several common expressions. Let's start with a very simple one, to table something. George Bernard Shaw was a famous playwright. He reportedly said that England and America are separated by the same language. However, he may not have said that. It was the Irish writer Oscar Wilde who wrote years earlier in his 1887 story, The Canterville Ghost, "We have really everything in common with America nowadays, except, of course, language." Regardless of who said it first, there is truth in this funny statement. Similar expressions can sometimes mean different things in the UK and the US. For example, the term to table means one thing in Britain, while it means the exact opposite in the United States. When Britain's Parliament wishes to consider an issue for discussion, members vote to table it. On the other hand, when the United States Senate or House of Representatives vote to table a proposal, lawmakers decide to set aside the plan or even kill it altogether. These differences led to misunderstandings between the two countries shortly after the United States entered World War II. As the Americans and British began to develop joint military plans, the term to table usually required a clearer explanation. There were British proposals that the Americans were strongly opposed to. They did not even want to discuss them. Respectfully, they said, "Let's table them." The British were happy to hear that. They thought the Americans were ready to give the proposals serious considerations. Boy, were they wrong. For a time, the misunderstandings could be troublesome, but in time, the two sides grew to understand what each meant by the expression to table, and communications between them improved. So did their military situation. In time, the Allies turned the tables on Nazi Germany. After being on the defensive for a long time, Allied forces moved forward to take the offensive on all battlefronts. The Allies turned the tables on German forces and defeated them. The expression to turn the tables means to give opponents the same treatment they have been giving you. This saying comes from a popular 16th century card game. In the game, a player might have found themselves in a worse position than his opponent, and so turning the board or table around put the other person in the same position. So the expression turn the tables comes from a game, and so does the expression cards on the table. If we put our cards on the table, we lay everything out in plain view. Nothing is hidden. However, people who want to keep their plans secret deal under the table. This expression is used to describe dishonest activities, such as cheating. An employer who pays a worker under the table is paying them illegally without taking out taxes. But if you bring something to a party, you don't put it under the table, you put it on the table. Often, when people are invited to parties, they bring something to eat or drink to share. Whether it is a bottle of wine or a chocolate cake, these gifts go on a table for everyone to enjoy. In American English, however, what you bring to the table is not limited to food or something to drink. What you bring to the table can be interesting stories, personal knowledge of a subject, or a witty sense of humor. These things all make the event better. So people who bring something to the table are those who bring something of value to a party, meeting, or event. On the other hand, if someone does not bring anything of value to a gathering, for whatever reason, we can say that person brings nothing to the table. You might ask, what does VOA Learning English bring to the table? We create stories and programs every day that, hopefully, help you improve your English. Thanks for listening. I'm Ana Mateo.
Thanks, Anna. Now we present The Making of a Nation. Franklin Roosevelt's first 3 months as president was one of the most exciting periods in American politics. Roosevelt entered the White House in March 1933. The nation was in crisis. Banks across the country had closed their doors. The Great Economic Depression was at its lowest point. Roosevelt and the Congress moved quickly to help people with little food or money. They launched a series of major economic programs. This week in our series, Doug Johnson and Mario Ritter tell us about the laws and policies of President Franklin Roosevelt, including those known as the Second New Deal.
Conditions improved within a year after Roosevelt took office. There was no question about that. Banks were open. More people had jobs. Farmers were doing better. And poor people were not so close to disaster as before. However, conditions were far from perfect. 10 million workers still did not have jobs. Young people leaving school were lucky to find any job at all. And most business owners were only earning small profits, if any at all. After the worst crisis was past, some groups of Americans began to attack Roosevelt and his programs. Conservatives were the first to break with the president. They accused Roosevelt of socialist economic policies.
Much more serious to Roosevelt was criticism from reformers within his own party. A number of popular leaders with strong ideas began to attract support from large numbers of Americans. Roosevelt saw his national unity falling apart. Conservatives were accusing him of socialism. Leftist opponents said he was doing too little to end the Depression. He saw that he had to change his path. Roosevelt knew he had little chance to regain the support of conservative Americans. His policies were too progressive. So, halfway through his first term as president, he began to support new reforms in an effort to win more support from the left.
The Supreme Court made the president's efforts easier. Early in 1935, the court ruled that several of Roosevelt's earlier programs violated the Constitution and ordered an end to them. Among them were major programs for farmers and industrial planning. The court's decisions forced Roosevelt to create new programs and try new ideas. One of his first new actions was to support a plan for government controls on companies that supplied water and produced electricity. Another was a measure to give jobs to workers. A third new law forced companies doing business with the federal government to pay workers a minimum wage. And the government also began enforcing a new law to control the actions of stock market traders and investment companies. At the same time, Roosevelt began to attack large companies. He spoke about the importance of small businesses in a democracy. He warned the nation that large companies had too much power. And he called for new actions to increase business competition and control large companies.
Roosevelt supported and Congress passed two laws during this period that would change the lives of working Americans for years to come. The first law gave more power to labor unions. The second created a federal system to provide money for workers after they retired. Roosevelt's administration had already supported labor unions in an earlier law. But that law was overruled by the Supreme Court. So, in 1935, the Congress passed a new law called the National Labor Relations Act. The act created a National Labor Relations Group to help negotiate agreements between workers and business owners. It gave all workers the right to join or form a labor union, and it ordered business owners to negotiate with a union if it represented most of the workers. The new law, for the first time, gave unions real power and negotiating rights.
The other very important law passed during this period created the National Social Security System. The law forced every worker and business owner to pay a small amount of money each month to the federal government. In exchange, the government paid money to workers who had retired or lost their jobs. The new law did not serve everyone. Farmers, government workers, and a number of other groups were not included in the system. The plan also did nothing to help people who were already unemployed. A person had to have a job after the new system began and then lose it to get money. However, the National Social Security law established a system that would grow and become a central part of American life.
Roosevelt also supported other new laws during this period that changed the American economy. A banking act gave the nation's central bank, the Federal Reserve Board, new power to control the total amount of money in use. Another law increased taxes for rich people. A third law limited the power of major companies to gain control of local electric utility companies. The new laws openly challenged the power of big companies, big banks, and big money. Roosevelt rejected the idea that government should cooperate with major companies. Instead, he accused many of the companies of ruining the economy and hurting the working man. He called on Congress to help small companies and the average American.
Perhaps the most important change during this period was that Roosevelt became willing to accept a federal budget that was not balanced. He began to agree with the ideas of Mariner Eccles, the head of the Federal Reserve Bank. Eccles believed that government had a duty to spend extra money during times of economic crisis. The extra money, he said, would create jobs for more people. They could buy more goods, and this would increase economic growth. Eccles believed that it was good policy for a government to spend more money than it earned through taxes during such periods. He argued that a growing economy would increase wages and bring in more tax money.
Roosevelt's administration had spent more money than it earned ever since it took office. But the president and his advisors did so only to end the economic crisis. They believed that it was a necessary evil. But Eccles and others told Roosevelt that it was not bad for the nation if the government spent more than it earned. The British economist John Maynard Keynes published an influential book that supported the same policy, and Roosevelt and his top advisors began to accept the new idea.
Roosevelt's economic policies were known as the New Deal. But the many changes he made during this period became known as the Second New Deal. They included some of the most important pieces of legislation in the history of the country, such as the National Labor Relations Act and the Social Security Law. And Roosevelt's willingness to accept an unbalanced budget would be the first step toward federal budget deficits that would grow steadily in the years to come. Budget deficits would jump under President Lyndon Johnson during the war in Vietnam. They would be an important cause of economic inflation in the United States and the world in the 1970s. And Americans would elect Ronald Reagan president in 1980, partly to try to bring federal spending under control. In 1935, however, most Americans agreed with Franklin Roosevelt that budget deficits were necessary to fight the serious economic depression. This program was written by David Jarmul. It was presented by Mario Ritter and Doug Johnson, and we thank them all. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from The Voice of America.